and the ship had gone. The conch was snatched from his hands, and Piggy's voice shrilled, "I didn't vote for no ghosts!" He whirled round on the assembly. "Remember that, all of you!" They heard him stamp. "What are we, humans? Or animals? Or savages? What's grown-ups going to think? Going off, hunting pigs, letting fires out? And now?" A shadow fronted him tempestuously. "You shut up, you fat slug!" There was a moment's struggle, and the glimmering conch jigged up and down. Ralph leapt to his feet. "Jack! Jack, you haven't got the conch! Let him speak!" Jack's face swam near him. "And you shut up! Who are you anyway, sitting there telling people what to do? You can't hunt, you can't sing. I'm chief. I was chosen. Why should choosing make any difference? Just giving orders that don't make any sense. Piggy's got the conch. Oh, that's right. Favour Piggy, as you always do. Jack!" Jack's voice sounded in bitter mimicry. "Jack! Jack! The rules!" shouted Ralph. "You're breaking the rules. Who cares?" Ralph summoned his wits. "Because the rules are the only thing we've got." But Jack was shouting against him. "Bollocks to the rules! We're strong, we hunt. If there's a beast, we'll hunt it down. We'll close in and beat and beat and beat!" He gave a wild whoop and leapt down to the pale sand. At once the platform was full of noise and excitement, scramblings, screams and laughter. The assembly shredded away and became a discursive and random scatter from the palms to the water and away along the beach beyond night sight. Ralph found his cheek touching the conch and took it from Piggy. "What's grown-ups going to say?" cried Piggy again. "Look at 'em!" The sound of mock hunting, hysterical laughter and real terror came from the beach. "Blow the conch, Ralph!" Piggy was so close that Ralph could see the glint of his one glass. "There's the fire. Can't they see?
You've got to be tough now. Make 'em do what you want."
Ralph answered in the cautious voice of one who rehearses a theorem. "If I blow the conch and they don't come back, then we've had it. We shan't keep the fire going. We'll be like animals. We'll never be rescued."
"If you don't blow, we'll soon be animals anyway. I can't see what they're doing, but I can hear."
The dispersed figures had come together on the sand and were a dense black mass that revolved. They were chanting something, and Littleans that had had enough were staggering away, howling. Ralph raised the conch to his lips and then lowered it. "The trouble is, are there ghosts, Piggy? Or beasts?"
"Course there aren't."
"Why not?"
"'Cause things wouldn't make sense. Houses and streets and TV. They wouldn't work."
The dancing, chanting boys had worked themselves away till their sound was nothing but a wordless rhythm. "But suppose they don't make sense. Not here, on this island. Supposing things are watching us and waiting." Ralph shuddered violently and moved closer to Piggy so that they bumped frighteningly.
"You stop talking like that. We got enough trouble, Ralph, and I've had as much as I can stand. If there is ghosts..."
"I ought to give up being chief. Hear 'em."
"Oh, Lord! Oh, no!"
Piggy gripped Ralph's arm.
"If Jack was chief, he'd have all hunting and no fire. We'd be here till we died."
His voice ran up to a squeak.
"Who's that sitting there?"
"Me. Simon." "Fat lot of good we are," said Ralph. "Three blind mice. I'll give up."
"If you give up," said Piggy in an appalled whisper, "what had happened to me?"
"Nothing."
"He hates me. I don't know why. If he could do what he wanted, you're all right. He respects you. Besides, you'd hit him."
"You were having a nice fight with him just now."
"I had the conch," said Piggy simply. "I had a right to speak."
Simon stirred in the dark. "Go on being chief."
"You shut up, young Simon. Why couldn't you say there wasn't a beast?"
"I'm scared of him," said Piggy, "and that's why I know him. If you're scared of someone, you hate him, but you can't stop thinking about him. You kid yourself he's all right, really, and then when you see him again, it's like asthma, and you can't breathe. I tell you what, he hates you too, Ralph."
"Me? Why me?"
"I don't know. You got him over the fire. and you're chief and he isn't.
But he's Jack married you.
I've been in bed so much I done some thinking. I know about people. I know about me and him. He can't hurt you. But if you stand out of the way, he'd hurt the next thing. And that's me.
Piggy's right, Ralph. There's you and Jack. Go on being chief.
We're all drifting, and things are going wrong. At home, there was always a grown-up. Please, sir, please, miss. And then you got an answer.
How I wish. I wish my auntie was here.
I wish my father. Oh, what's the use?
Keep the fire going.
The dance was over, and the hunters were going back to the shelters.
Grown-ups know things, said Piggy. They ain't afraid of the dark. They'd meet and have tea and discuss. Then things would be all right.
They wouldn't set fire to the island. Or lose. They'd build a ship. The three boys stood in the darkness, striving unsuccessfully to convey the majesty of adult life. They wouldn't quarrel.
Or break my specs.
Or talk about a beast.
If only they could get a message to us, cried Ralph desperately. If only they could send us something grown up. A sign or something.
A thin wail out of the darkness chilled them and set them grabbing for each other. Then the wail rose, remote and unearthly, and turned to an inarticulate gibbering. Percival Weems Madison, of the Vicarage, Harcourt St. Anthony, lying in the long grass, was living through circumstances in which the incantation of his address was powerless to help him. Chapter 6. Beast from Air. There was no light left save that of the stars. When they had understood what made this ghostly noise, and Percival was quiet again, Ralph and Simon picked him up unhandily and carried him to a shelter. Piggy hung about near for all his brave words, and the three bigger boys went together to the next shelter. They lay restlessly and noisily among the dry leaves, watching the patch of stars that was opening towards the lagoon. Sometimes a little un cried out from the other shelters, and once a big un spoke in the dark. Then they too fell asleep. A sliver of moon rose over the horizon, hardly large enough to make a path of light, even when it sat right down on the water. But there were other lights in the sky that moved fast, winked, or went out, though not even a faint popping came down from the battle fought at 10 miles height. But a sign came down from the world of grown-ups, though at the time there was no child awake to read it. There was a sudden bright explosion and a corkscrew trail across the sky, then darkness again, and stars. There was a speck above the island, a figure dropping swiftly beneath a parachute, a figure that hung with dangling limbs. The changing winds of various altitudes took the figure where they would. Then, 3 miles up, the wind steadied and bore it in a descending curve round the sky and swept it in a great slant across the reef and the lagoon towards the mountain. The figure fell and crumpled among the blue flowers of the mountainside. But now there was a gentle breeze at this height, too, and the parachute flopped and banged and pulled. So the figure, with feet that dragged behind it, slid up the mountain. Yard by yard, puff by puff, the breeze hauled the figure through the blue flowers, over the boulders and red stones, till it lay huddled among the shattered rocks of the mountain top. Here the breeze was fitful, and allowed the strings of the parachute to tangle and festoon, and the figure sat, its helmeted head between its knees, held by a complication of lines. When the breeze blew, the lines would strain taut, and some accident of this pull lifted the head and chest upright, so that the figure seemed to peer across the brow of the mountain. Then, each time the wind dropped, the lines would slacken, and the figure bow forward again, sinking its head between its knees. So as the stars moved across the sky, the figure sat on the mountaintop and bowed and sank and bowed again. In the darkness of early morning, there were noises by a rock a little way down the side of the mountain. Two boys rolled out of a pile of brushwood and dead leaves, two dim shadows talking sleepily to each other. They were the twins, on duty at the fire. In theory, one should have been asleep and one on watch, but they could never manage to do things sensibly if that meant acting independently. And since staying awake all night was impossible, they had both gone to sleep. Now they approached the darker smudge that had been the signal fire, yawning, rubbing their eyes, treading with practiced feet. When they reached it, they stopped yawning, and one ran quickly back for brushwood and leaves. The other knelt down. "I believe it's out." He fiddled with the sticks that were pushed into his hands. "No." He lay down and put his lips close to the smudge and blew softly. His face appeared lit redly. He stopped blowing for a moment. "Sam, give us tinderwood." Eric bent down and blew softly again till the patch was bright. Sam poked the piece of tinderwood into the hot spot, then a branch. The glow increased, and the branch took fire. Sam piled on more branches.
"Don't burn the lot," said Eric. "You're putting on too much. Let's warm up. We'll only have to fetch more wood." "I'm cold."
"So am I.
Besides, it's dark. All right, then."
Eric squatted back and watched Sam make up the fire. He built a little tent of dead wood, and the fire was safely alight.
"That was near. He'd have been waxy."
For a few moments, the twins watched the fire in silence. Then Eric sniggered.
"Wasn't he waxy?
About the
fire and the pig. Lucky he went for Jack instead of us. Remember old Waxy at school? Boy, you are driving me slowly insane."
The twins shared their identical laughter, then remembered the darkness and other things, and glanced round uneasily. The flames, busy about the tent, drew their eyes back again. Eric watched the scurrying woodlice that were so frantically unable to avoid the flames, and thought of the first fire, just down there on the steeper side of the mountain, where now was complete darkness. He did not like to remember it, and looked away at the mountain top. Warmth radiated now, and beat pleasantly on them. Sam amused himself by fitting branches into the fire as closely as possible. Eric spread out his hands, searching for the distance at which the heat was just bearable. Idly looking beyond the fire, he resettled the scattered rocks from their flat shadows into daylight contours. Just there was the big rock, and the three stones there, that split rock, and there beyond was a gap, just there.
"Sam?"
"Huh?"
"Nothing."
The flames were mastering the branches. The bark was curling and falling away, the wood exploding. The tent fell inwards and flung a wide circle of light over the mountain top.
"Sam?"
"Huh?"
"Sam? Sam?"
Sam looked at Eric irritably. The intensity of Eric's gaze made the direction in which he looked terrible, for Sam had his back to it. He scrambled round the fire, squatted by Eric, and looked to see. They became motionless, gripped in each other's arms, four unwinking eyes aimed, and two mouths open. Far beneath them the trees of the forest sighed, then roared. The hair on their foreheads fluttered, and flames blew out sideways from the fire. 15 yards away from them came the plopping noise of fabric blown open. Neither of the boys screamed, but the grip of their arms tightened and their mouths grew peaked. For perhaps 10 seconds they crouched like that, while the flailing fire sent smoke and sparks and waves of inconstant light over the top of the mountain. Then, as though they had but one terrified mind between them, they scrambled away over the rocks and fled. Ralph was dreaming. He had fallen asleep after what seemed hours of tossing and turning noisily among the dry leaves. Even the sounds of nightmare from the other shelters no longer reached him, for he was back from where he came from, feeding the ponies with sugar over the garden wall. Then someone was shaking his arm, telling him that it was time for tea.
"Ralph, wake up!"
The leaves were roaring like the sea.
"Ralph, wake up!"
"What's the matter?"
"We saw the beast! Plain!"
"Who are you? The twins?"
"We saw the beast!"
"Quiet. Piggy."
The leaves were roaring still. Piggy bumped into him, and a twin grabbed him as he made for the oblong of paling stars.
"You can't go out. It's horrible."
"Piggy, where are the spears?"
"I can hear the—"
"Quiet, then. Lie still." They lay there listening, at first with doubt, but then with terror, to the description the twins breathed at them between bouts of extreme silence. Soon the darkness was full of claws, full of the awful unknown and menace. An interminable dawn faded the stars out, and at last light, sad and grey, filtered into the shelter. They began to stir, though still the world outside the shelter was impossibly dangerous. The maze of the darkness sorted into near and far, and at the high point of the sky the cloudlets were warmed with colour. A single seabird flapped upwards with a hoarse cry that was echoed presently, and something squawked in the forest. Now streaks of cloud near the horizon began to glow rosily, and the feathery tops of the palm were green. Ralph knelt in the entrance to the shelter and peered cautiously round him. "Sam and Eric, call them to an assembly. Quietly. Go on." The twins, holding tremulously to each other, dared the few yards to the next shelter and spread the dreadful news. Ralph stood up and walked, for the sake of dignity, though with his back pricking, to the platform. Piggy and Simon followed him, and the other boys came sneaking after. Ralph took the conch from where it lay on the polished seat and held it to his lips. But then he hesitated and did not blow. He held the shell up instead and showed it to them, and they understood. The rays of the sun that were fanning upwards from below the horizon swung downwards to eye level. Ralph looked for a moment at the growing slice of gold that lit them from the right hand and seemed to make speech possible. The circle of boys before him bristled with hunting spears. He handed the conch to Eric, the nearest of the twins.
"We've seen the beast with our own eyes." "No, we weren't asleep."
Sam took up the story. By custom now, one conch did for both twins, for their substantial unity was recognised.
"It was furry. There was something moving behind its head. Wings. The beast moved, too. That was awful. It kind of sat up. The fire was bright. We'd just made it up. More sticks on. There were eyes, teeth, claws. We ran as fast as we could, bashed into things. The beast followed us. I saw it slinking behind the trees. Nearly touched me."
Ralph pointed fearfully at Eric's face, which was striped with scars where the bushes had torn him. "How did you do that?" Eric felt his face.
"I'm all rough. Am I bleeding?"
The circle of boys shrank away in horror. Johnny, yawning still, burst into noisy tears and was slapped by Bill till he choked on them. The bright morning was full of threats, and the circle began to change. It faced out rather than in, and the spears of sharpened wood were like a fence. Jack called them back to the centre.
"This'll be a real hunt. Who'll come?"
Ralph moved impatiently.
"These spears are made of wood. Don't be silly."
Jack sneered at him.
"Frightened?
Of course I'm frightened. Who wouldn't be?" He turned to the twins, yearning but hopeless. "I suppose you aren't pulling our legs?" The reply was too emphatic for anyone to doubt them. Piggy took the conch.
"Couldn't we kind of stay here? Maybe the beast won't come near us."
But for the sense of something watching them, Ralph would have shouted at him. "Stay here,
and be cramped into this bit of the island, always on the lookout? How should we get our food? And what about the fire?
Let's be moving, said Jack restlessly. We're wasting time.
No, we're not. What about the Littlans?
Sucks to the Littlans.
Someone's got to look after them.
Nobody has so far.
There was no need. Now there is. Piggy'll look after them.
That's right. Keep Piggy out of danger.
Have some sense. What can Piggy do with only one eye? The rest of the boys were looking from Jack to Ralph curiously. And another thing. You can't have an ordinary hunt because the beast doesn't leave tracks. If it did, you'd have seen them. For all we know, the beast may swing through the trees like what's-its-name. They nodded. So we've got to think. Piggy took off his damaged glasses and cleaned the remaining lens.
How about us, Ralph?
You haven't got the conch. Here.
I mean, how about us? Suppose the beast comes when you're all away. I can't see proper. And if I get scared...
Jack broke in contemptuously.
You're always scared. I got the conch. Conch! Conch! Shouted Jack. We don't need the conch anymore. We know who ought to say things. What good did Simon do speaking, or Bill, or Walter? It's time some people knew they've got to keep quiet and leave deciding things to the rest of us.
Ralph could no longer ignore his speech. The blood was hot in his cheeks.
You haven't got the conch, he said. Sit down.
Jack's face went so white that the freckles showed as clear brown flecks. He licked his lips and remained standing.
This is a hunter's job.
The rest of the boys watched intently. Piggy, finding himself uncomfortably embroiled, slid the conch to Ralph's knees and sat down. The silence grew oppressive, and Piggy held his breath.
This is more than a hunter's job, said Ralph at last, because you can't track the beast. And don't you want to be rescued?
He turned to the assembly.
Don't you all want to be rescued?
He looked back at Jack.
I said before, the fire is the main thing. Now the fire must be out.
The old exasperation saved him and gave him the energy to attack.
Hasn't anyone got any sense? We've got to relight that fire.
You never thought of that, Jack, did you? Or don't any of you want to be rescued?
Yes, they wanted to be rescued. There was no doubt about that. And with a violent swing to Ralph's side, the crisis passed. Piggy let out his breath with a gasp, reached for it again, and failed. He lay against a log, his mouth gaping, blue shadows creeping round his lips. Nobody minded him.
Now think, Jack. Is there anywhere on the island you haven't been?
Unwillingly, Jack answered.
There's only... But of course, you remember the tail-end part where the rocks are all piled up? I've been near there. The rock makes a sort of bridge. There's only one way up.
And the thing might live there.
All the assembly talked at once.
Quiet! All right. That's where we'll look. If the beast isn't there, we'll go up the mountain and look.
And light the fire.
Let's go.
We'll eat first, then go.
Ralph paused. We'd better take spears. End of Disc 3. Lord of the Flies, Disc 4. After they had eaten, Ralph and the Biggins set out along the beach. They left Piggy propped up on the platform. This day promised, like the others, to be a sunbath under a blue dome. The beach stretched away before them in a gentle curve, till perspective drew it into one with the forest. For the day was not advanced enough to be obscured by the shifting veils of mirage. Under Ralph's direction, they picked a careful way along the palm terrace, rather than dare the hot sand down by the water. He let Jack lead the way, and Jack trod with theatrical caution, though they could have seen an enemy 20 yards away. Ralph walked in the rear, thankful to have escaped responsibility for a time. Simon, walking in front of Ralph, felt a flicker of incredulity. A beast with claws that scratched, that sat on a mountaintop, that left no tracks, and yet was not fast enough to catch Sam Nerick. However Simon thought of the beast, there rose before his inward sight the picture of a human, at once heroic and sick. He sighed.
Other people could stand up and speak to an assembly, apparently, without that dreadful feeling of the pressure of personality, could say what they would, as though they were speaking to only one person. He stepped aside and looked back. Ralph was coming along, holding his spear over his shoulder. Diffidently, Simon allowed his pace to slacken, until he was walking side by side with Ralph, and looking up at him through the coarse black hair that fell now to his eyes. Ralph glanced sideways, smiled constrainedly as though he had forgotten that Simon had made a fool of himself, then looked away again at nothing. For a moment or two, Simon was happy to be accepted, and then he ceased to think about himself. When he bashed into a tree, Ralph looked sideways impatiently, and Robert sniggered. Simon reeled, and a white spot on his forehead turned red and trickled. Ralph dismissed Simon and returned to his personal hell. They would reach the castle sometime, and the chief would have to go forward. Jack came trotting back.
We're in sight now.
All right. We'll get as close as we can. He followed Jack towards the castle, where the ground rose slightly. On their left was an impenetrable tangle of creepers and trees.
Why couldn't there be something in that?
Because you can see nothing goes in or out.
What about the castle, then?
Look.
Ralph parted the screen of grass and looked out. There were only a few more yards of stony ground, and then the two sides of the island came almost together, so that one expected a peak of headland. But instead of this, a narrow ledge of rock, a few yards wide and perhaps 15 long, continued the island out into the sea. There lay another of those pieces of pink squareness that underlay the structure of the island. This side of the castle, perhaps 100 feet high, was the pink bastion they had seen from the mountaintop. The rock of the cliff was split, and the top littered with great lumps that seemed to totter. Behind Ralph, the tall grass had filled with silent hunters. Ralph looked at Jack.
You're a hunter.
Jack went red.
I know. All right.
Something deep in Ralph spoke for him.
I'm chief. I'll go. Don't argue.
He turned to the others.
You, hide here.
Wait for me. He found his voice tended either to disappear or to come out too loud. He looked at Jack.
Do you think?
Jack muttered.
I've been all over. It must be here.
I see. Simon mumbled confusedly.
I don't believe in the beast.
Ralph answered him politely, as if agreeing about the weather. No, I suppose not. His mouth was tight and pale. He put back his hair very slowly.
Well, so long.
He forced his feet to move until they had carried him out onto the neck of land. He was surrounded on all sides by chasms of empty air. There was nowhere to hide, even if one did not have to go on. He paused on the narrow neck and looked down. Soon, in a matter of centuries, the sea would make an island of the castle. On the right hand was the lagoon, troubled by the open sea. And on the left, Ralph shuddered. The lagoon had protected them from the Pacific, and for some reason only Jack had gone right down to the water on the other side. Now he saw the landsman's view of the swell, and it seemed like the breathing of some stupendous creature. Slowly the waters sank among the rocks, revealing pink tables of granite, strange growths of coral, polyp, and weed. Down, down the waters went, whispering like the wind among the heads of the forest. There was one flat rock there, spread like a table, and the waters, sucking down on the four weedy sides, made them seem like cliffs. Then the sleeping leviathan breathed out. The waters rose, the weed streamed, and the water boiled over the table rock with a roar. There was no sense of the passage of waves, only this minute-long fall and rise and fall. Ralph turned away to the red cliff. They were waiting behind him in the long grass, waiting to see what he would do. He noticed that the sweat in his palm was cool now, realized with surprise that he did not really expect to meet any beast, and didn't know what he would do about it if he did. He saw that he could climb the cliff, but this was not necessary. The squareness of the rock allowed a sort of plinth round it, so that to the right, over the lagoon, one could inch along a ledge and turn round the corner out of sight. It was easy going, and soon he was peering round the rock. Nothing but what you might expect. Pink, tumbled boulders with guano layered on them like icing, and a steep slope up to the shattered rocks that crowned the bastion. A sound behind him made him turn. Jack was edging along the ledge.
"Couldn't let you do it on your own."
Ralph said nothing. He led the way over the rocks, inspected a sort of half-cave that held nothing more terrible than a clutch of rotten eggs, and at last sat down, looking round him and tapping the rock with the butt of his spear. Jack was excited.
"What a place for a fort!"
A column of spray wetted them. No fresh water.
"Oh, what's that, then?"
There was indeed a long green smudge halfway up the rock. They climbed up and tasted the trickle of water.
"You could keep a coconut shell there, filling all the time."
"Not me. This is a rotten place." Side by side, they scaled the last height to where the diminishing pile was crowned by the last broken rock. Jack struck the near one with his fist, and it grated slightly.
"Do you remember?"
Consciousness of the bad times in between came to them both. Jack talked quickly.
"Shove a palm tree under that, and if an enemy came, look!"
100 feet below them was the narrow causeway, then the stony ground, then the grass dotted with heads, and behind that, the forest.
"One heave!" cried Jack, exulting. "And whee!"
He made a swooping movement with his hand. Ralph looked towards the mountain.
"What's the matter?"
Ralph turned. "Why?"
"You were looking... I don't know how."
"There's no signal now. Nothing to show."
"You're nuts on the signal!"
The taut blue horizon encircled them, broken only by the mountaintop. "That's all we've got." He leaned his spear against the rocking stone and pushed back 2 handfuls of hair. "We'll have to go back and climb the mountain. That's where they saw the beast."
"The beast won't be there."
"What else can we do?" The others, waiting in the grass, saw Jack and Ralph unharmed and broke cover into the sunlight. They forgot the beast in the excitement of exploration. They swarmed across the bridge and soon were climbing and shouting. Ralph stood now, 1 hand against an enormous red block, a block large as a mill wheel that had been split off and hung tottering. Somberly, he watched the mountain. He clenched his fist and beat hammer-wise on the red wall at his right. His lips were tightly compressed, and his eyes yearned beneath the fringe of hair.
"Smoke!"
He sucked his bruised fist.
"Jack, come on!"
But Jack was not there. A knot of boys, making a great noise that he had not noticed, were heaving and pushing at a rock. As he turned, the base cracked, and the whole mass toppled into the sea, so that a thunderous plume of spray leapt halfway up the cliff.
"Stop it! Stop it!"
His voice struck a silence among them. "Smoke." A strange thing happened in his head. Something flitted there in front of his mind like a bat's wing, obscuring his idea.
"Smoke!" At once the ideas were back, and the anger. "We want smoke, and you go wasting your time! You roll rocks!" Roger shouted, "We've got plenty of time!"
Ralph shook his head. "We'll go to the mountain." The clamour broke out. Some of the boys wanted to go back to the beach, some wanted to roll more rocks. The sun was bright, and danger had faded with the darkness.
"Jack? The beast might be on the other side. You can lead again. You've been." "We could go by the shore. There's fruit."
Bill came up to Ralph.
Why can't we stay here for a bit?
That's right. Let's have a fort.
There's no food here, said Ralph, and no shelter. Not much fresh water.
This would make a wizard fort.
We can roll rocks right onto the bridge. I say we'll go on, shouted Ralph furiously. We've got to make certain.
We'll go now.
Let's stay here. Back to the shelter. I'm tired.
No!
Ralph struck the skin off his knuckles. They did not seem to hurt.
I'm chief. We've got to make certain.
Can't you see the mountain? There's no signal showing. There may be a ship out there. Are you all off your rockers? Mutinously, the boys fell silent, or muttering. Jack led the way down the rock and across the bridge. Chapter 7 Shadows and Tall Trees. The pig run kept close to the jumble of rocks that lay down by the water on the other side, and Ralph was content to follow Jack along it. If you could shut your ears to the slow suck down of the sea and boil of the return, if you could forget how dun and unvisited were the ferny coverts on either side, then there was a chance that you might put the beast out of mind and dream for a while. The sun had swung over the vertical, and the afternoon heat was closing in on the island. Ralph passed a message forward to Jack, and when they next came to fruit, the whole party stopped and ate. Sitting, Ralph was aware of the heat for the first time that day. He pulled distastefully at his grey shirt and wondered whether he might undertake the adventure of washing it. Sitting under what seemed an unusual heat, even for this island, Ralph planned his toilet. He would like to have a pair of scissors and cut this hair. He flung the mass back. Cut this filthy hair right back to half an inch. He would like to have a bath, a proper wallow with soap. He passed his tongue experimentally over his teeth and decided that a toothbrush would come in handy too. Then there were his nails. Ralph turned his hand over and examined them. They were bitten down to the quick, though he could not remember when he had restarted this habit, nor any time when he indulged it. Be sucking my thumb next. He looked round furtively. Apparently no one had heard. The hunters sat stuffing themselves with this easy meal, trying to convince themselves that they got sufficient kick out of bananas and that other olive-grey, jelly-like fruit. With the memory of his sometime clean self as a standard, Ralph looked them over. They were dirty, not with the spectacular dirt of boys who had fallen into mud or been brought down hard on a rainy day. Not one of them was an obvious subject for a shower, and yet hair much too long, tangled here and there, knotted round a dead leaf or a twig. Faces cleaned fairly well by the process of eating and sweating, but marked in the less accessible angles with a kind of shadow. Clothes worn away, stiff like his own with sweat, put on not for decorum or comfort, but out of custom. The skin of the body scurfy with brine. He discovered, with a little fall of the heart, that these were the conditions he took as normal now, and that he did not mind. He sighed and pushed away the stalk from which he had stripped the fruit. Already the hunters were stealing away to do their business in the woods or down by the rocks. He turned and looked out to sea. Here, on the other side of the island, the view was utterly different. The filmy enchantments of mirage could not endure the cold ocean water, and the horizon was hard, clipped blue. Ralph wandered down to the rocks. Down here, almost on a level with the sea, you could follow with your eye the ceaseless, bulging passage of the deep sea waves. They were miles wide, apparently not breakers or the banked ridges of shallow water. They travelled the length of the island with an air of disregarding it and being set on other business. They were less a progress than a momentous rise and fall of the whole ocean. Now the sea would suck down, making cascades and waterfalls of retreating water, would sink past the rocks and plaster down the seaweed like shining hair. Then, pausing, gather and rise with a roar, irresistibly swelling over point and outcrop, climbing the little cliff, sending, at last, an arm of surf up a gully, to end a yard or so from him, in fingers of spray. Wave after wave, Ralph followed the rise and fall, until something of the remoteness of the sea numbed his brain. Then, gradually, the almost infinite size of this land forced itself on his attention. This was the divider, the barrier. On the other side of the island, swathed at midday with mirage, defended by the shield of the quiet lagoon, one might dream of rescue. But here, faced by the brute obtuseness of the ocean, the miles of division, one was clamped down, one was helpless, one was condemned, one was... Simon was speaking almost in his ear. Ralph found that he had rock painfully gripped in both hands, found his body arched, the muscles of his neck stiff, his mouth strained open.
"You'll get back to where you came from."
Simon nodded as he spoke. He was kneeling on one knee, looking down from a higher rock, which he held with both hands. His other leg stretched down to Ralph's level. Ralph was puzzled and searched Simon's face for a clue.
"It's so big. I mean..."
Simon nodded.
"All the same, you'll get back all right. I think so, anyway."
Some of the strain had gone from Ralph's body. He glanced at the sea and then smiled bitterly at Simon. "Got a ship in your pocket?" Simon grinned and shook his head. "How do you know, then?" When Simon was still silent, Ralph said curtly, "You're batty." Simon shook his head violently till the coarse black hair flew backwards and forwards across his face.
"No, I'm not. I just think you'll get back all right."
For a moment, nothing more was said. And then they suddenly smiled at each other. Roger called from the coverts,
"Come and see."
The ground was turned over near the pig run, and there were droppings that steamed. Jack bent down to them, as though he loved them.
"Ralph, we need meat, even if we are hunting the other thing."
"If you mean going the right way, we'll hunt."
They set off again, the hunters bunched a little by fear of the mentioned beast, while Jack quested ahead. They went more slowly than Ralph had bargained for. Yet in a way he was glad to loiter, cradling his spear. Jack came up against some emergency of his craft, and soon the procession stopped. Ralph leaned against a tree, and at once the daydreams came swarming up. Jack was in charge of the hunt, and there would be time to get to the mountain. Once, following his father from Chatham to Devonport, they had lived in a cottage on the edge of the moors. In the succession of houses that Ralph had known, this one stood out with particular clarity, because after that house he had been sent away to school. Mummy had still been with them, and Daddy had come home every day. Wild ponies came to the stone wall at the bottom of the garden, and it had snowed. Just behind the cottage there was a sort of shed, and you could lie up there watching the flakes swirl past. You could see the damp spot where each flake died. Then you could mark the first flake that lay down without melting and watch the whole ground turn white. You could go indoors when you were cold and look out of the window past that bright copper kettle and the plate with the little blue men. When you went to bed, there was a bowl of cornflakes with sugar and cream. And the books. They stood on the shelf by the bed, leaning together, with always two or three laid flat on top because he had not bothered to put them back properly. They were dog-eared and scratched. There was the bright, shining one about Topsy and Mopsy that he never read because it was about two girls. There was the one about the magician, which you read with a kind of tied-down terror, skipping page 27 with the awful picture of the spider. There was a book about people who had dug things up. Egyptian things. There was the boy's book of trains, the boy's book of ships. Vividly they came before him, He could have reached up and touched them, could feel the weight and slow slide with which the mammoth book for boys would come out and slither down. Everything was all right. Everything was good-humoured and friendly. The bushes crashed ahead of them. Boys flung themselves wildly from the big track and scrabbled in the creepers, screaming. Ralph saw Jack nudged aside and fall. Then there was a creature bounding along the pig track towards him, with tusks gleaming and an intimidating grunt. Ralph found he was able to measure the distance coldly and take aim. With the boar only 5 yards away, he flung the foolish wooden stick that he carried, saw it hit the great snout, and hang there for a moment. The boar's note changed to a squeal, and it swerved aside into the covert. The pig run filled with shouting boys again. Jack came running back and poked about in the undergrowth. "Through here!" "But he'd do us." "Through here," I said. The boar was floundering away from them. They found another pig run parallel to the first, and Jack raced away. Ralph was full of fright and apprehension and pride. "I hit him. The spear stuck in." Now they came unexpectedly to an open space by the sea. Jack cast about on the bare rock and looked anxious.
"He's gone."
"I hit him," said Ralph again, "and the spear stuck in a bit." He felt the need of witnesses. "Didn't you see me?" Morris nodded. "I saw you. Right bang on his snout. Whee-hee!" Ralph talked on excitedly. "I hit him all right. The spear stuck in. I wounded him." He sunned himself in their new respect, and felt that hunting was good, after all.
"I walloped him properly. That was the beast, I think."
Jack came back.
"That wasn't the beast. That was a boar. I hit him." "Why didn't you grab him? I tried—"
Ralph's voice ran up.
"But a boar!"
Jack flushed suddenly.
"You said he'd do us. What did you want to throw for? Why didn't you wait?"
He held out his arm.
"Look."
He turned his left forearm for them all to see. On the outside was a rip, not much, but bloody.
"He did that with his tusks. I couldn't get my spear down in time."
Attention focused on Jack. "That's a wound," said Simon. "And you ought to suck it, like Berengaria." Jack sucked.
"I hit him," said Ralph indignantly. "I hit him with my spear. I wounded him."
He tried for their attention. "He was coming along the path. I threw like this." Robert snarled at him. Ralph entered into the play, and everybody laughed. Presently they were all jabbing at Robert, who made mock rushes. Jack shouted, "Make a ring!" The circle moved in and round. Robert squealed in mock terror, then in real pain.
"Ow! Stop it! You're hurting!"
The butt end of a spear fell on his back, and he blundered among them.
"Hold him!"
They got his arms and legs. Ralph, carried away by a sudden thick excitement, grabbed Eric's spear and jabbed at Robert with it.
"Kill him! Kill him!"
All at once, Robert was screaming and struggling with the strength of frenzy. Jack had him by the hair and was brandishing his knife. Behind him was Roger, fighting to get close. The chant rose ritually, as the last moment of a dance or a hunt.
"Kill the pig! Cut his throat! Kill the pig! Bash him in!"
Ralph, too, was fighting to get near, to get a handful of that brown, vulnerable flesh. The desire to squeeze and hurt was overmastering. Jack's arm came down. The heaving circle cheered and made pig-dying noises. Then they lay quiet, panting, listening to Robert's frightened snivels. He wiped his face with a dirty arm and made an effort to retrieve his status. "Oh, my bum!" He rubbed his rump ruefully. Jack rolled over.
"That was a good game."
"Just a game," said Ralph uneasily. "I got jolly badly hurt at Rugger once."
"We ought to have a drum," said Morris. "Then we could do it properly."
Ralph looked at him.
"How properly?"
"I don't know."
"You want a fire, I think, and a drum, and you keep time to the drum."
"You want a pig," said Roger, "like a real hunt."
"Or someone to pretend," said Jack. You could get someone to dress up as a pig, and then he could act, you know, pretend to knock me over and all that.
You want a real pig, said Robert, still caressing his rump, because you've got to kill him.
Use a little un, said Jack,
and everybody laughed.
Ralph sat up. Well, we shan't find what we're looking for at this rate.
One by one they stood up, twitching rags into place. Ralph looked at Jack. Now for the mountain.
Shouldn't we go back to Piggy? Said Morris. Before dark?
The twins nodded like one boy.
Yes, that's right. Let's go up there in the morning.
Ralph looked out and saw the sea. We've got to start the fire again.
You haven't got Piggy's specs, said Jack, so you can't.
Then we'll find out if the mountain's clear. Morris spoke, hesitating, not wanting to seem a funk. Supposing the beast's up there. Jack brandished his spear.
We'll kill it.
The sun seemed a little cooler. He slashed with the spear.
What are we waiting for?
I suppose, said Ralph, if we keep on by the sea this way, we'll come out below the burnt bit, and then we can climb the mountain. Once more, Jack led them along by the sark and heave of the blinding sea. Once more, Ralph dreamed, letting his skillful feet deal with the difficulties of the path. Yet here his feet seemed less skillful than before. For most of the way they were forced right down to the bare rock by the water, and had to edge along between that and the dark luxuriance of the forest. There were little cliffs to be scaled, some to be used as paths, lengthy traverses where one used hands as well as feet. Here and there they could clamber over wave-wet rock, leaping across clear pools that the tide had left. They came to a gully that split the narrow foreshore like a defence. This seemed to have no bottom, and they peered awe-stricken into the gloomy crack where water gurgled. Then the wave came back, the gully boiled before them, and spray dashed up to the very creeper, so that the boys were wet and shrieking. They tried the forest, but it was thick and woven like a bird's nest. In the end, they had to jump one by one, waiting till the water sank, and even so, some of them got a second drenching. After that, the rocks seemed to be growing impossible, so they sat for a time, letting their rags dry, and watching the clipped outlines of the rollers that moved so slowly past the island. They found fruit in a haunt of bright little birds that hovered like insects. Then Ralph said they were going too slowly. He himself climbed a tree and parted the canopy, and saw the square head of the mountain seeming still a great way off. Then they tried to hurry along the rocks, and Robert cut his knee quite badly, and they had to recognize that this path must be taken slowly if they were to be safe. So they proceeded after that as if they were climbing a dangerous mountain, until the rocks became an uncompromising cliff, overhung with impossible jungle, and falling sheer into the sea. Ralph looked at the sun critically. Early evening, after tea time at any rate.
I don't remember this cliff, said Jack, crestfallen. So this must be the bit of the coast I missed.
Ralph nodded. Let me think. By now, Ralph had no self-consciousness in public thinking, but would treat the day's decisions as though he were playing chess. The only trouble was that he would never be a very good chess player. He thought of the Littlens and Piggy. Vividly he imagined Piggy by himself, huddled in a shelter that was silent, except for the sounds of nightmare.
We can't leave the Littlens alone with Piggy. Not all night.
The other boys said nothing but stood round, watching him.
If we went back, we should take hours.
Jack cleared his throat and spoke in a queer, tight voice.
We mustn't let anything happen to Piggy, must we?
Ralph tapped his teeth with the dirty point of Eric's spear.
If we go across, he glanced round him, someone's got to cross the island and tell Piggy we'll be back after dark.
Bill spoke, unbelieving.
Through the forest by himself? Now?
We can't spare more than one.
Simon pushed his way to Ralph's elbow. I'll go, if you like. I don't mind, honestly.
Before Ralph had time to reply, he smiled quickly, turned, and climbed into the forest. Ralph looked back at Jack, seeing him infuriatingly for the first time.
Jack, that time you went the whole way to the Castle Rock.
Jack glowered.
Yes.
You came along part of this shore, below the mountain, beyond there.
Yes.
And then?
I found a pig run. It went for miles.
Ralph nodded. He pointed at the forest.
So the pig run must be somewhere in there.
Everybody agreed, sagely.
All right, then. We'll smash a way through till we find the pig run.
He took a step and halted.
Wait a minute, though. Where does the pig run go to?
The mountain, said Jack. I told you.
He sneered.
Don't you want to go to the mountain?
Ralph sighed, sensing the rising antagonism, understanding that this was how Jack felt as soon as he ceased to lead.
I was thinking of the light. We'll be stumbling about.
We were going to look for the beast.
There won't be enough light.
I don't mind going, said Jack hotly. I'll go when we get there. Won't you? Would you rather go back to the shelters and tell Piggy?
Now it was Ralph's turn to flush, but he spoke despairingly out of the new understanding that Piggy had given him.
Why do you hate me?
The boys stirred uneasily, as though something indecent had been said. The silence lengthened. Ralph,
still hot and hurt, turned away first.
Come on. He led the way and set himself, as by right, to hack at the tangles. Jack brought up the rear, displaced and brooding. The pig track was a dark tunnel, for the sun was sliding quickly towards the edge of the world, and in the forest shadows were never far to seek. The track was broad and beaten, and they ran along at a swift trot. Then the roof of leaves broke up, and they halted, breathing quickly, looking at the few stars that pricked round the head of the mountain.
There you are.
The boys peered at each other doubtfully. Ralph made a decision.
We'll go straight across to the platform and climb tomorrow.
They murmured agreement. But Jack was standing by his shoulder.
If you're frightened, of course.
Ralph turned on him. Who went first on the Castle Rock?
I went too, and that was daylight.
All right. Who wants to climb the mountain now?
Silence was the only answer.
Sam Nerick, what about you?
We ought to go and tell Piggy. Yes, tell Piggy that...
But Simon went.
We ought to tell Piggy in case...
Robert? Bill?
They were going straight back to the platform now. Not, of course, that they were afraid, but tired. Ralph turned back to Jack.
You see?
I'm going up the mountain.
The words came from Jack viciously, as though they were a curse. He looked at Ralph, his thin body tensed, his spear held as if he threatened him.
I'm going up the mountain to look for the beast. Now.
Then the supreme sting, the casual, bitter word.
Coming.
At that word, the other boys forgot their urge to be gone and turned back to sample this fresh rub of two spirits in the dark. The word was too good, too bitter, too successfully daunting to be repeated. It took Ralph at low water when his nerve was relaxed for the return to the shelter and the still friendly waters of the lagoon. I don't mind. Astonished, he heard his voice come out, cool and casual, so that the bitterness of Jack's taunt fell powerless. If you don't mind, of course.
Oh, not at all.
Jack took a step.
Well, then.
Side by side, watched by silent boys, the two started up the mountain. Ralph stopped.
We're silly. Why should only two go? If we find anything, two won't be enough.
There came the sound of boys scuttling away. Astonishingly, a dark figure moved against the tide.
Roger?
Yes.
Well, that's three, then.
Once more they set out to climb the slope of the mountain. The darkness seemed to flow round them like a tide. Jack, who said nothing, began to choke and cough, and a gust of wind set all three spluttering. Ralph's eyes were blinded with tears.
Ashes. We're on the edge of the burnt patch.
Their footsteps and the occasional breeze were stirring up small devils of dust. Now that they stopped again, Ralph had time, while he coughed, to remember how silly they were. If there was no beast, and almost certainly there was no beast, in that case, well and good. But if there was something waiting on top of the mountain, what was the use of three of them handicapped by the